Hello, and welcome to Clinical Nutrition Notes, a podcast where we speak with guest experts and opinion leaders about the art and science of clinical nutrition. Brought to you by Nestle Health Science Canada, this podcast is intended for healthcare professionals for education purposes. I'm your host today, Bethany Hopkins, Medical Affairs Manager with Nestle Health Science. Today, we'll be talking with three clinicians across the country about how COVID-19 has had an impact on their dysphagia practice, key learnings, and implications for the future. I'll take a minute now to introduce our three panelists. Peter Lamb is a registered dietitian and credentialed food service executive in Vancouver, British Columbia. Over the past 25 years, he's focused his practice in dysphagia and mealtime management. Peter provides consultation to the healthcare, food service, and hospitality industries, and is currently co-chair of the International Dysphagia Diet Standardization Initiative. Jean Helps is a registered dietitian and regional clinical nutrition manager for long-term care within the Winnipeg Region Health Authority in Manitoba. Jean is registered with the College of Dietitians of Manitoba. In her role within the Winnipeg Region Health Authority, Jean provides support to clinical dietitians and sites within the region. Considering the prevalence of dysphagia in long-term care, Jean has a special interest in this setting. By working with experts and frontline dietitians, she's developed practice guidelines for dysphagia management and has also been involved in tailoring practice considering the impact of COVID-19 in challenging us to continue to provide high-quality care in a difficult environment. Now, moving further east, Ellen Andrews is an adult medical speech-language pathologist with Briere Continuing Care in Ottawa, Ontario. Over the past 19 years, she has served patients with complex and chronic health conditions, including dysphagia, augmentative and alternative communication, and respiratory care. Ellen is an enthusiastic supporter of the International Dysphagia Diet Initiative and served as leader of implementation at IDSI across her multi-center site in 2017. During COVID-19, Ellen has put on her mask and her headband and changed her wardrobe to scrubs so she's been able to continue doing her work at St. Vincent Hospital. A warm welcome to all three of you, and thank you for joining us today. As we know, COVID-19 has had a considerable impact on the lives of individuals and has touched virtually all areas of healthcare. When we're thinking about the field of nutrition, one of the areas that has been particularly affected has been the area of dysphagia assessment and management. Today, we'll be talking about the implications of the COVID-19 pandemic and really getting each of your perspectives on how this has changed your dysphagia practices. So Peter, let's begin with you on the West Coast. You're involved in dysphagia in the primary care setting. Can you briefly share the impact of COVID-19 on your dysphagia practice?
Thanks, Bethany. COVID-19 has had a huge impact on how we perform dysphagia assessments in many different settings. One of the primary things that I do is to work with my speech pathology or occupational therapy colleague to perform dysphagia assessments in a home care setting. And unfortunately, with COVID-19, there are many people who are no longer wanting us to come and visit them in their home. So many of our assessments are now having to be done virtually. The challenges have been just immense. First of all, with the clientele that we support, half of them, the challenge is really learning the technology, even just to get an assessment set up in a virtual environment. We need to take the extra time to actually teach them how to use the technology before we can even get into the assessment itself. Furthermore, the actual instructions to have people perform any type of oral mechanism or oral motor exam is not really done as easily because you're not there physically demonstrating this. Some of our clients who have virtual visual impairment, they have challenges seeing what's happening on the screen. And I know this sounds really weird when I say this, but one of the things I miss most is the ability to have the sense of smell in a virtual environment. Mm-hmm. You might be able to see, you might be able to hear, but you certainly can't smell. You don't know what the food smells like. You don't know what the environment smells like. And it may sound, again, very weird, but you don't even know what the person's breath smells like. And that could tell you a lot about the person's oral hygiene. So, you know, that's really just a little bit of how it's impacted our practice in a home care environment for dysphagia management.
Yes, thank you, Peter. It's interesting. I can see everyone's heads nodding as you're speaking. But eating, it's such a tactile experience. It involves so many senses. So just imagining the challenges, and not to mention the fact that, you know, we're not all IT experts. And so, you know, getting used to the technology and the individual you're working with, getting them used to the technology is really quite something that many of us have never faced before. So thank you for sharing that. Jean, I'll turn over to you now. What are you seeing from your perspective as a clinical nutrition manager, and how has COVID-19 had an impact on dysphagia management in long-term care?
Thank you, Bethany. COVID-19 has inherently affected some aspects of our practice. In long-term care, we need to protect frail older adults with multiple comorbidities. So early on in the pandemic, what that meant was a change from communal to physically distanced dining. And this has affected our ability to assess and monitor. And I think, Peter, of some of our discussions have how being in the dining room and seeing how people are doing is really important. Peter, you had commented on some of the challenges that you have in having individuals demonstrate their ability to do certain things. And while it is a different kind of challenge, the challenge still exists in our setting. And that is wearing PPE definitely limits our ability to demonstrate for our clients. The last thing I want to mention is dietitians have been involved in pandemic menu planning. And from a dysphagia perspective, this has resulted in fewer texture-modified diets available in the interest of easy-to-prepare meals for less staff. And this is another unfortunate consequence of the pandemic in that there are fewer food choices for residents.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, Jean, to hear, you know, the parallels between, you know, your experience in long-term care and Peter's experience in the community. And again, kind of coming back to the value of mealtime observation, and kind of, even though people are there in person, it's not the same what we do to observe, and people being physically isolated and just some of the efficiencies or inefficiencies that potentially creates, and then the impact it has on the actual food being served as well in variety. Yeah, there's lots of lots of spin-offs, you know, related to this in the long-term care setting. Now, Alan, interested in your perspective, working in a facility environment as well, but in your case, a chronic care environment, what has been the impact of COVID-19 in your setting?
I've really found COVID-19 has been a series of sort of evolving stories. When this went all the way back to March, our practice initially was very little impacted. We lost access to outpatient assessment services. Our video fluoroscopies were contracted to another healthcare facility, but otherwise we were really functioning almost as normal, which was strange in other ways, being the only one of my family and the only one of most of my acquaintances who is still getting up, getting dressed, and going out the door every morning. Certainly, as the spring and summer evolved, we dealt with a series of very upsetting outbreaks in our long-term care facilities, where we had voluntary deployment of many therapy staff to go help out with very basic tasks of patient care, resident care, to get through that. Unfortunately, the second wave has had an absolute major and quite devastating effect on my organization. As I speak, we have just come off a facility-wide outbreak that was focused on our respiratory care program, and we still have units in our hospital who remain on outbreak. This had immediate changes in our clinical practice. Staff was immediately cohorted to certain areas and was no longer allowed to travel even between units. So many challenges of coordinating services in that regard. As we know, COVID being so contagious, we had many, many staff sent home either with COVID or just on isolation precautions when that outbreak hit. And so we immediately went into a severe issue of staffing collapse. So my role as a speech-language pathologist has changed radically in the last 2 months. I've been very well employed doing other jobs. I've been a porter. I've been a feeder. I've stocked linen carts. I've used my passion for communication to facilitate FaceTime conversations with families. And I've really been called upon as a member of an interdisciplinary team to facilitate my colleagues who are either absent or restricted from certain units because of the infection risk. So I have helped the social worker fill out forms. I've dispensed booties for the OT. I have done clinical assessment with our registered dietitian over FaceTime. I've consulted with speech pathologists and other facilities by telephone and by email to try to continue to offer our patients the services they need. As we've looked at our dysphagia practice, we've had to limit non-urgent issues, and this has certainly led to delays in addressing maybe less urgent issues, but very, very important for our patients relating to things like quality of life.
I mean, we can see you today joining our call in your scrubs, Ellen, you know, giving us a real sense of what's happening. The whole concept of interdisciplinary collaboration and cross training, it's really taking that to a whole new level that some of us, I mean, we just wouldn't have imagined a year ago. So thank you very much for sharing that. When we're thinking about the future, you know, we don't have a crystal ball, and that's probably a good thing. Although thinking about the future, I just would like to take a moment to think about what each of you anticipates for the future, knowing what you know now, the implications of the COVID-19 pandemic, and how this might shape your dysphagia practice moving forward. So Jean, let's start with you this time. What do you envision at this point for the future of dysphagia in long-term care, given the pandemic and the learnings?
In my region, COVID cases are on the rise, and as a result, the plans that we had developed in the spring are being reinforced. And from a clinical perspective, what this means is coordinating our visits on the unit so we don't spend a lot of time going to and between units. We also need to pair with complementary disciplines. And so Ellen's speech-language pathology is a key team member that we work with. And it was interesting to see that you have been doing that with dietitians in your area. We also have provided virtual service. Dietitians are deemed essential and are excluded from the one site model. However, we have provided virtual service, which has meant a need to have really good communication with the unit. There also is the potential for staff shortages. All disciplines, including dietitians, need to perform at our full scope of practice. And this may mean that we're doing functions that we haven't typically done. And training is essential in this kind of situation. And just as you had mentioned, Ellen, we may need to perform support staff duties. And an obvious fit for us would be helping in the dining room. Because as we are helping residents eat and setting up their meals, we can do our assessments. There have been a number of tools developed to help promote intake and monitor. And we also need to move to virtual dietitian dysphagia training because we obviously can't do the in-person side-by-side mentorship as we've done in the past. So COVID-19 has placed us in a situation of needing to think progressively and creatively. And we've developed a number of processes and tools. And I'm very sure that some of these will endure into the future.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jean. Yes, that seems to be a common theme, doesn't it? Some of these learnings and that we're going to expect to see, just practice will be different in the future. Ellen, how do you see, you know, coming back to what you're doing at Briere in complex continuing care. And you talked already about a lot of the things that have happened in terms of cross-functional roles and changes. How do you see the future of dysphagia care in your setting?
Thanks, Bethany. I think this whole experience has really driven home things we knew before, but maybe weren't embracing fully. How important that the strong interdisciplinary practice is, how important those relationship building within the team is, and within the professions themselves. While we do focus, our work structure here is sort of a unit-based approach where it's interdisciplinary, we have seen the importance of the professional groups too banding together as a speech pathology group. How are we going to manage the services throughout this organization at this time when we're not able to be doing our regular roles? So I think there's been a lot of empowerment of the frontline staff, and certainly a lot of acknowledgement too from our leadership about our role in being flexible and being leaders in times of great change and great disruption. So I'm certainly hoping that going forward, this may support other things we've been advocating for, instrumental dysphagia assessment in-house, for instance, where we've been so limited on accessing services outside the organization, and just a continuing acknowledgement of the importance of sharing skills across disciplines and within groups so that we are all ready at all times to jump into a variety of roles.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ellen. And Peter, lastly, thinking about your perspective on the future implications of COVID-19 in primary care and the community, where do you see things going in that particular area?
Bethany, I think what COVID-19 has done is actually taught us to become much more efficient and proficient clinicians. We need to be better prepared for when we are having assessments with individuals. I talked earlier, and as the other panelists had referred to, about the need to use technology to help us with communication. We now have the opportunity to use technology to have quick huddles with our colleagues. We are able to check in with caregivers. We're able to check in with patients in a much more efficient way now compared to what we used to do. And I think in going forward, we need to embrace some of this technology and look at how this technology can actually help us in being able to provide service in a much more comprehensive way to the people we support.
Thank you, Peter. And as I'm reflecting on what all of you have said, you know, these key common themes about, you know, organization and efficiency, technology, and really just new ways of working, together that we're going to see continue in the future and could lead to, you know, improvements in practice ultimately down the road, which is, I guess, nice to think of considering everything else that's going on in our environment right now. I want to thank each of you for sharing your thoughts and no doubt our understanding about this pandemic and the implications for dysphagia practice is going to continue to evolve in sort of the weeks, months, and dare say years ahead as we learn more. So I do have one last question for each of you before we go, so our viewers can get to know you a little bit better. We've been talking about COVID-19, about the pandemic, and of course it's been a source of stress and adversity for many people. And with this, there's been a lot of talk about the concept of resiliency and, you know, what resiliency can do to help us adapt and make sense of these times. So I would like each of you to share with our listeners just one tool or one approach that you found personally helpful to be more resilient during these unprecedented times. So Ellen, I'll start with you.
Thank you so much. I think I've reflected a few times already today on the different roles we've adopted during COVID. Another role I hadn't mentioned is I'm a certified worker member and co-chair of our Joint Health and Safety Committee. So through COVID, I've had a very active role in working to promote the safety of my coworkers and my patients and my organization. I think having to step into that role and take that leadership, that chance to love and serve others through that role has strengthened myself. When I know I am working to make my workplace and my colleagues safer, it helps me feel more secure in very, very stressful times. So I've been very grateful for that chance as well.
Thank you, Ellen. Peter, a tool or a strategy that you have?
Bethany, I think the most important thing to remember is that we need to take care of ourselves. And so one of the things that I've been doing is making sure that I don't go crazy with booking my appointments by making them back to back, and taking that extra few minutes out in between seeing people online and virtually, just to reflect on the fact that, you know, other people are in the same circumstance, and it's very important to put ourselves in their shoes to know how they're feeling. Sometimes it's not just about the clinical appointment itself, but it's even just the stress of not being able to see someone and recognizing that, you know, they're only looking at this person on their computer monitor or, you know, iPad screen. And so it's really important to realize that part of it and become human in this screen for them.
Thank you, Peter. Jean, what have you found?
Yeah, I think as I've been listening to Ellen and Peter, it occurs to me that one of the things that I think helps with resilience is simply working together. And as a routine, I've worked with my colleagues, and it's even more important now. But I'm going to share with you one tip that I think is related to looking after ourselves. And that is going out for walks in the woods with friends or family. And there actually is a name for it. It's called forest therapy. So I had no idea that I actually was engaging in something that has a name. But I have found that that is extremely valuable for resilience and just kind of carrying on with all of the things that we need to do. If I can just mention one other thing, and that is that I have faith in public health, and I trust their expertise and their messages. We are all in this together. We need to work together, and we will get through this.
Thank you. Thank you. So, you know, about loving and serving others, about keeping that human sort of touch, that human factor, taking time as well for ourselves, loving ourselves as much as loving others. And I love sort of the forest therapy. And here on the East Coast, we get a little bit of ocean therapy from time to time as well, which is sort of similar. So thank you so much for sharing those insights. On that note, we'll conclude the podcast, and I'd like to thank you, Peter, Ellen, and Jean, for joining us today. I'd like to thank all of our listeners and viewers. This concludes our episode of the Clinical Nutrition Notes podcast. For more podcast episodes, visit Clinical Nutrition Notes at nestlehealthscience.ca.